This is the Last Week in English podcast, winter semester 2019-20, week 6, with me, Mark Jacob, coming to you from the TU Berg Academy Freiburg. Our guest today is in fact the guest of a chemistry student here in Freiburg. He's come all the way from the USA, the University of Washington, Seattle campus to be precise, and although he's lived most of his life in the States, he was actually born in Cambodia in Southeast Asia. Today, he's going to tell us about something about studying in America and his observations from his short time here in Freiburg. So, welcome, Andrew Tang.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So, before we start off talking about what you're doing here in Freiburg, maybe you could tell us a little bit about your background. I mentioned you were born in Cambodia.
I was born in Cambodia to both Cambodian parents, although Chinese-Cambodian. And I lived there just 1 year. Then I moved all the way to the United States and basically lived there for my entire life.
Right, so you have no memories of Cambodia?
Yeah, no memories at all. And the funny thing is, although I am Cambodian and my family has been there for 3 generations, I'm actually 7/8 Chinese.
Okay.
Yeah, so only 1/8 actual Cambodian, ethnically speaking.
Okay, it's even more complicated than I
Very
than I
complicated.
Thought. So, yeah, you spent most of your life in the States. Could you tell us a little bit about growing up in the States?
Let's see. Growing up in the States, my family moves a lot everywhere. Just because finding jobs and such was really difficult, especially during the 2009 recession era. But, yeah, I don't really remember that much because just a whole bunch of moving. I only remember since 2015-ish. That's when we actually settled down and been living in a single place since now. And yeah, things are radically different in America than here in Germany.
So like, for example, at the university there, I said you're studying at the University of Washington Seattle campus. Mm-hmm. And how different is that to Freiburg?
Oh, very, very different. Not just in the architecture, but how the classes are set up and everything. The first thing you'll notice at the University of Washington campus is, or Seattle campus, is how gothic it looks. Greeted by all these buildings, 2 different libraries. The Cisalo Library in the center, which looks something out of Dracula. Administration building, which looks even more frightening out of Dracula. Yeah, just architecture itself is very gothic and huge. These buildings are gigantic. They tower in the sky. And yeah, that's a architectural difference. Culturally speaking, the university is very competitive. They take competition. They basically put competition in everything. Like, for example, getting into the university itself is difficult. Not only do you have to pay a ridiculous amount of money, like, what was it? $12,000 per year if you're in state, or $20,000 if you're out of state. There you only get there's about a 40% chance you'll get in to the university at all. And then with me, I'm doing engineering, so engineering is very, very competitive. There's just not enough resources and so many applicants. That's a further 60% chance of getting in. So if you multiply both those together, if you're applying to the University of Washington for engineering, you only have a 20% chance of actually getting in.
Okay, but you got in.
Yeah, I got in, which I'm very lucky to. I'm very grateful for.
What's it based on? Is it based on your scores on your graduation from high school, or
it's
on
based
a test?
It's based on a lot of different things. So yeah, your high school grade point average, tests, extracurricular activities, your personal life, i.e. personal statements and resume, and yeah, a lot more other stuff as well.
Right, okay. Mm-hmm. And that is different here, because if the students are successful, or they graduate from high school, let's say here, then that's it. Then they can sign up to study here.
Yeah, the competition doesn't end once you get in the university. Once you do get in the university, well, in my case at least, you become an engineering undeclared student.
So, undeclared?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You don't actually have a major. You're just exploring and taking all the prerequisites to get into the major. And then that's where the fun begins. At the end of your first year at university, you apply for all these different majors from, well, in my case, engineering majors, from bioengineering to aeronautical engineering to chemical engineering and so forth. And yeah, you have a chance to get into those, especially computer science engineering. You have a very low chance of getting into that. Since mm-hmm. just so many people just want in. There's not enough resources to go around.
Right. So you mm-hmm. have to choose a first, second, and third choice then.
Yeah. Right? First, second, third, fourth, fifth, and sixth choice.
Oh.
Yeah. And if you are direct to college, meaning that you applied from high school directly to college, as long as you meet all the prerequisites and the deadlines, you are guaranteed to get a major in engineering. Just a major. Not the one you want, just any. Mm-hmm.
And so what stage are you at then at the moment?
Washington State.
Oh, I mean, what stage are you at in your, are you in the first year or second year?
Oh yeah, in the first year. I just finished my first quarter. Basically just introductory classes to engineering and let's see, there's an engineering community building activity with a small cohort of 30 people. Along with chemistry, general chemistry, and calculus.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And which major is it that you're going for?
I'm going for material science engineering.
Okay, that's something that we have here in Freiburg as well.
Yeah. More specifically, I'm going to increase my chances of getting to that because I did get accepted into research. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be researching with Professor Christine Luscom. I'm not sure if you know her name, but I did some research on her and she is pretty well known. She is the director of the polymer division for the IUPAC.
Mm,
yeah. Okay. And wow. Has published and co-published more than 100 articles, been cited 6,000 plus times.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, she's pretty prestigious. I'm gonna be researching semiconducting polymers along with polymer photovoltaic systems.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, printing out a solar cell just with your normal inkjet printer
mm-hmm.
with different cartridge and such, and then sticking that on your roof and now you have a solar panel.
Okay. Are these like flexible solar panels, that sort of thing?
Yeah, flexible. They're polymer as well.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you get a chance already fairly close to the beginning of your studies to be involved in research. And...
Oh, yeah. And the thing about America is these opportunities, they're not going to go looking for you. You have to be very proactive and look. Before I got that opportunity, let's see, I applied to 3 different jobs, or actually, no, not even 3, probably 7 different jobs, emailed a lot more other people. And most of the time, no response. Sometimes you get into the interview stage, such as this other internship. It was with the company called OceanGate, which does submarines. I got into the very last stage, but didn't get selected, mainly because I needed a boating license, which I didn't have. And it was more convenient for them to pick another person who did have a boating license.
Mm-hmm. So is it all students then who are doing this, who are competing to also to do research or to have a job as well while they're studying?
Basically, it's very, very competitive in the United States. You need something to distinguish you from all the others.
Right. Okay. How do you rate your chances then of getting your major?
With the research and all the other stuff stacked onto it, hopefully nearing 70-ish%. If that fails, then my backup is astronautical and aeronautical engineering. That fails, chemical engineering. If that fails, probably bioengineering or electrical engineering, and last one would probably be industrial processes engineering.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if the worst comes to the worst, you're still going to be doing engineering then.
Yeah, because I'm a director college student, I'm guaranteed to get in one of those.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and now the subjects that you've been doing so far, are there any standout subjects where you think, oh, this is really my thing?
Just math and chemistry so far, along with physics. I haven't taken physics class yet in the university, although I will next quarter. But I did take the International Baccalaureate program in my high school, and I did 2 years of HL physics. So we started off with basics approximating like to power of tens and start off with that. Then we ended the year with quantum mechanics and special relativity, which is pretty fun.
Yeah. I mean, it's quite advanced.
Yeah. We did have to draw Feynman diagrams for how the weak nuclear force changes a proton into neutron while factoring in color, charge conservation, electron spin, and all that other fancy stuff, which at that point, you just can't conceptualize.
Right.
It's not possible to conceptualize any of that.
Yeah.
Once you're in higher level math, so I heard you will just have to trust the math.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, you've got me thinking about Feynman diagrams now. Mm. Okay, and what about practical things? I mean, do you do a lot of labs already?
Oh yeah, university and high school, we did a lot of labs. One of the labs in high school physics class was just measuring the heat capacity of metals and put the water to boiling. That measures the room temperature, and then you got those two values, you can plug it into the equation, then you're done. So really simplistic labs and such. Now in university, labs get a lot more complicated. One of the latest labs we did was measuring the or experimentally determining the rate formula for the reaction of crystal violet between hydroxide. And crystal violet's a very, very deep purple color. Hydroxide irreversibly binds to one of the double bonds and creates crystal hydroxide, which is colorless. So what we ended up doing was they give us a stock solution of like 5×10⁻⁴ molar crystal violet solution. We diluted those down into 5 different dilutions and stuck it into a, I think it was a photospectrometer, where it would picked out the highest wavelength of absorbance and just measured the absorption for the crystal violet to create a curve, a calibration curve, which we then used to determine the crystal violet concentration based off of the amount of light absorbed by the solution.
Okay.
Yep.
And when you have to do something like that, do you get a lot of instructions, or do you have to find out yourself how to carry out the experiment?
You see, the instructions in our lab manual, they're very verbose. Mm. In fact, you get more instructions than you actually need. An entire cage in the lab notebook was dedicated on teaching how to use a digital pipette.
Mm-hmm.
So you get much more instructions than you need, and it just overcomplicates everything. But yeah, that was actually the first part of the lab, by the way, I explained. Mm-hmm. The second part was reacting it with the crystal violet inside the photospectrometer and then writing down around 200 data points, then putting all that into Excel, taking the natural log of the crystal violet solution and so forth, and then making the concentration of sodium hydroxide much greater than the concentration of crystal violet. So you can say that the sodium hydroxide concentration stays the same throughout the entire reaction. Mm-hmm. You have a pseudo rate constant, then you can figure out all the other constants from that based off of like graphs and slopes.
Mm.
So it was fairly math heavy, along with measuring and just lab work.
Mm. And do you work alone then for that, or in pairs? Or in pairs. Groups? In pairs, right.
Yeah. I think I had a good score on that. 50 out of 60 points.
Okay.
I missed 2 points because I forgot to include the units for the rate constant.
Right, yeah, classic. No units.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, okay, so you've already been busy in the lab so far. You mentioned you finished the first quarter. I mean, here in Germany, we have 2 semesters per year, and in Seattle, then you have 4 quarters to the year.
It really varies on what university you go to. Every university is different, but the University of Washington has a quarter system. 12 weeks per quarter. Then you have 2 midterms in the quarter. So every 4 weeks, you have a midterm, a test, which decides approximately 40 to 60% of your grade.
Mm.
Then you have homework between those midterms, which accounts for usually 10%.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have a final, which accounts for 40% of your grade at the end.
Okay, so they keep you busy then throughout.
Yeah, very busy. The finals are scheduled 1 week after the midterms, and it's basically universal for every class.
Right.
Every class will have the same, or will have the same range in final dates.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have four 11-week quarters, then that doesn't leave much time for vacation.
Not at all. Well, not four. You get three quarters. One quarter.
Oh, three quarters.
Yeah, the summer quarter is your vacation, unless you want to take classes there. Yeah.
So it's possible to take classes in the summer.
Yeah. Although you will have to request, if you are dependent on financial aid, you will have to go to the office and just ask them for financial aid for summer.
Okay. So you've been here for a week,
mm-hmm.
is that right? And what differences have you noticed here at the university to back home?
The first difference is class sizes.
Mm-hmm.
The classes here are relatively small. Well, actually really, really small compared to the classes back at my university. My university has 50,000 students in it.
Mm.
Lots and lots of students occupying a 2.7 square kilometer area. Over here, you go into the class, there's usually like 30, maybe 40-ish students at once. Yeah, my chemistry class, there was about 600 students. It's quite a stark difference. Also, the amount of experiments was also really nice too. Chemistry class, there was just experiments after experiments or demonstrations. My university, our general chemistry class was held in the lecture hall, one of the general lecture halls, so we weren't able to really do much of those experiments. Although we were able to do thermite, which was really fun. And also the food here is really nice. A plate of food from the cafeteria, like €4 for that, that's an amazing deal. You can expect €12 for that in my university.
Mm-hmm.
And just overall, the general cost. I heard from Paul that dorms cost only $200 a month and you get your own room, shared kitchen, own bathroom. Yeah, I'm moving into my university next quarter in the dorms. It's going to cost me $2,200 per quarter, shared with three people in a, with a shared bathroom and shared kitchen across the entire floor. Yeah, so it's quite a stark difference.
Right. And you've probably discussed with your friend Paul then, like, what it's like for him, what it's like for you. What about the workload?
The workload? No, over here, definitely much more workload over here.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if this applies to every student, but just looking at how much work Paul has to do, yeah, it's quite a bit. Compared to my university, you can decide to put on a light workload or a heavy workload. It really is up to you because you just sign up for the classes and you can choose to not sign up for this class. You can choose to opt out, drop it later even. So it really depends on what classes you take. For instance, I'm taking three STEM classes next quarter.
Okay. Like what we call in Germany, MINT then.
MINT.
Yeah. And like science, technology,
engineering, mathematics.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not recommended to take three of those classes at once. Right. So let's see, integral calculus with, physical chemistry, I think, and just mechanics. And that's not really recommended. The workload is huge on those classes each. And then you have to deal with physics and chemistry labs at the same time. So yeah, it's quite a bit.
Yeah. And what about the type of work you do? Is that similar here or are there any differences in the type?
No, basically the same.
Same.
It's basically an identical amount of work.
Right.
From math class to physics to chemistry.
Right. You've been to some lectures.
Yeah, I
have. This week. Yeah,
I've been through all the lectures, actually.
All the lectures, yeah.
Yeah, and I can tell you, we are basically learning the same thing at this point.
Okay. What about the student lifestyle? And How does that differ from what you've seen?
It's a lot different. It's a lot different. My university, usually you see all the students hanging out, they're going to the university shops and such, and then straight to classes. Over here, it's sort of the same, almost, or in that regard, but a lot more people are just studying, from what I could see, in the libraries on their own, than studying with friends, and lots and lots of studying in my university.
So more studying on their own here, I mean?
Yeah, more studying on their own here than with groups and friends, is what I can see.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and what about, like, understanding things here? How did you understand, like, let's say, the German? Do you speak any German?
I wish. I was supposed to take German for before coming here, my first quarter of university, but I just didn't have the actual time to put German in, because we did have to take required classes. So, yeah, this entire year I won't be able to learn any German, but next year I will learn German. And how I managed to survive in Germany, in Freiburg, was with the help of Paul.
Right,
translator.
Okay. Right.
Plus people here know to speak English as well. Right. Some people.
Yeah, I mean, it's a university town, so a lot of definitely the students, staff, and...
Of course, speaking with some of the older shopkeepers and folks is more challenging.
Right, because they're here... Well, 30 years ago, they learned Russian rather than English. Yeah,
it's part of East Germany. Or yeah. East. Yeah, it was East Germany, but part of the Soviet Union.
Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah, they were connected. Mm-hmm. What about other languages then? Do you speak any other languages apart from English?
Oh, yeah. I speak Cambodian Spanish. I've been taking Spanish for 5 years at my high school. And yeah, I actually tested... I did the International Baccalaureate test for Spanish. I managed to pass, so the state of Washington actually gave me a small medal saying that I can speak Spanish now.
Oh, okay.
Which is really fun.
Yeah, and I mean, Spanish, is that the second language, would you say, in the States?
Spanish? Well, if you go to California or near the Southern America-Mexican border, you could say that it's the second language. There's even Spanish advertisements, Spanish announcements at the airport and so forth. So yeah, it's fairly common in the United States.
Mm. But where you are then in Washington State, you're...
It's also common, but you go to America, you hear a lot more languages than you'd hear, a lot more diversity in languages.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's see, when I go to university, probably the top three languages that pop up aside from English are Korean, Chinese, and Spanish.
Okay.
Those are the top three languages.
So an Asian influence.
Oh, yeah. 10% of the students there are, international students? I think 30% are Asian.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. And you said you speak Cambodian as well. Is that at home then with your family?
Yeah, at home with parents.
Yeah.
I'm illiterate in Cambodian though.
Uh-huh.
That's the thing. But Cambodian, it's a very weird language compared to the European languages. Very, very different. If you look at the Cambodian alphabet, you'll notice how each letter makes a sound, and then there's a picture right next to that letter, because every letter is actually a word. It's a single syllable word. And then you have all these modifiers which change that sound for every single letter. So if you understand what the letter sounds like, if you understand what the modifier does, you can basically read Cambodian. All you have to do is just look at the letter, just say it out loud, and then you'll understand what you're saying.
Okay. But you said you can't really read Cambodian.
I can't read it at all, but I have a feeling if I do decide to learn the alphabet and such, it won't be that difficult for me.
Right. And have you ever spoken it with people outside of your family?
Oh, yeah, all the time. I went to Cambodia last summer, and it tested the limits of my Cambodian.
Right. And how did that feel then, going to Cambodia? Did you feel at home there, or did you feel like an American visitor?
I felt more like a visitor because, well, first and foremost, my skin is pale, extremely pale, as opposed to the rest of the rest of the people there. So almost immediately, I was pointed out as a visitor or as a foreigner. basically. People were surprised when I could speak Cambodian and when I told them I was actually born there. Really surprised. I got a few like kids coming up to me and just speaking to me in Chinese and English, which is really fun.
And what were your impressions there?
There's Cambodia? A huge class divide. Very, very big. Let's see. The first time I arrived there, I think you arrived in some slums, actually, where, yeah, just stray animals everywhere and people wearing like raggedy clothing. And then you went to the luxury mall where other people were dropping hundreds of dollars at a time on luxury goods. There's a very big class divide there. Very, very big.
Mm-hmm. And where did you stay then? Did you stay in hotels
or
did
you stay with relatives? I stayed with relatives, yeah. My aunt was fortunate enough to be a nurse. $20 a day, which was able to buy her almost a mansion. Yeah, it's... The economy's not that great.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And they also use American money as well. It's it's not an official currency, but it's... Everybody accepts it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you've got some roots there in Cambodia, but you... Mm-hmm. From the States, and now you've got some connections to Europe here.
Yeah, definitely.
So, I mean, looking into the future a little bit, hoping you manage to do your material science and engineering and, mm-hmm. and you graduate. I mean, can you imagine yourself working somewhere like Europe or in Asia or in the States? Or how do you imagine your future?
Mm-hmm. Let's see. I just basically want to do what I love, and that is making things. My dream goal for the future would be to be on the team that sends people to Mars. That is quite a stretch, though.
Uh-huh.
But thinking more realistically, I'd be perfectly happy designing and making airplanes. And yeah, and because I'm from Washington State, Boeing is huge there. They have facilities everywhere. In fact, I live about... let's say 14 kilometers from the Boeing facility that makes 737s.
Okay,
lot of opportunity with them. Then you have SpaceX and Blue Origin, which are also stationed there. Then you have people like Bill Gates, whose house is less than 100 kilometers away from mine.
Yeah.
So yeah, I guess you could say Washington or the greater Seattle area it's ripe with opportunity.
Right.
If you know how to find it.
Okay, you have to be competitive, then, as you said.
You have to be very, very proactive in finding all those opportunities.
Right. Mm-hmm. And you said you want to make things. I mean, I hear you already make things. Is that right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I did buy about 2 years ago during Christmas, I bought a 3D printer with some money I got from my last internship. And yeah, and ever since I've been just upgrading, maintaining it, and just... designing stuff on my computer and printing it out.
Okay, and what sort of things do you make then with your 3D printer?
Oh, lots and lots of things. Like, for instance, the hinge of my fridge broke. It was a plastic hinge. So I just took out my caliper, like glued it back together, and then or just glued the parts so that it looked approximately the same. And then designed that on the computer and printed it out and replaced it.
Okay.
Works perfectly.
Okay, so it's very practical.
Yep, and then you have other stuff which I make for fun, like I've been pushing the limits of 3D printing. So I've actually printed a spring out, which works and is a three-dimensional spring, not one of those two-dimensional ones.
Mm-hmm.
Fully printable without supports.
Okay, and what material do you use then?
Water bottle plastic, mainly. PET plastic.
Mm-hmm.
Also PLA. If I really want high quality prints for like figurines and such, I'll use PLA plastic.
Mm-hmm.
PET, on the other hand, is for strength.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And do you make things for other people as well?
Oh yeah. Pencil holders. I made a check valve for somebody before.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And, some of the other things I make, I've been trying to make composite materials using my 3D printer.
Mm-hmm.
So basically deliberately under extruding the material so that you have just gaps in between every layer of your 3D print and then filling that up with epoxy resin. And you make a very, very strong composite material. Like, let's see, a cube probably about, 5 centimeters in length and 1 centimeter in diameter, it can withstand a hammer blow.
Okay. Well, and have you combined this hobby with your studies at all? Have you done any projects for school or studies?
Definitely. Yeah. Are you familiar with the International Baccalaureate Program?
Well, I've heard of it. Yeah, I was familiar. But
yeah, they basically require you to do something called the internal assessment, which is philosophy, a paper in philosophy and history and mathematics and physics and all that other stuff. I think they're 2,200 words each. And then they also require you to do something called the extended essay, which is a miniature thesis, actually, for your end of high school year, for around 4,000 words. So I did mine on designing for 3D printing and creating an iterative process which produces higher strength parts.
Okay, wow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I got a force gauge and everything for that project, and it did work. I was able to successfully increase the strength of my 3D printed parts by 500% based off of my iteration process.
Okay, wow. And is that something that many people do then, 3D printing in your circles?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'm in an engineering circle, my group of friends are engineers right now, and they're very familiar with 3D printing. Although I have yet to meet people who actually have a 3D printer at their home. Or who are like just as invested into it as I am.
Yeah. So you've got a few days left here in Freiburg, is that right? Or how much longer?
Yeah, a few days.
Yeah, so anything you want to catch before you go?
I want to walk across the German-Swiss border. That's what I'm planning to do. And then going to Dresden to maybe visit some of the libraries, because I heard they're huge there.
All right.
Mm-hmm. Other than that, I don't know what else to do. I have so little time left.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. But you think you'll be coming back?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
I love it here. It's amazing here.
Okay. I think that's a good conclusion to finish with. So thank you very much, Andrew, for talking to us.
Thank you.
And telling us about your life and your hobbies and your studies.
Mm-hmm.
And if you come back, or when you come back, then you're welcome back here. And then we can have another chat.
Thank you. Yeah, definitely.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.